Meet Sven.
Yeah.
He's very excited right now. Sven doesn't play poker, but he's still very excited. You see, Sven is a dealer for Porsche, and he's just found out that PokerStars players earn $7.5 million in VIP points every month. And with our all-inclusive program, that's enough to redeem 5 of the lovely pieces of German engineering every day.
Yeah!
Keep Sven happy. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out why our rewards program seems to leave other schemes, well, out of commission. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Annie Up PokerCast presented by PokerStars. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's January 28th, 2011. You're listening to the best, the Bubblicious PokerCast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I am not going to say my name on the show after you say Bubblicious.
Come on!
Scott Long has never been Bubblicious in his life.
We're chewy, we're expandable.
Oh, man.
Although we're not pink.
Wow. Wow, are we off to a wonderful start on this show.
I had to throw you off because you think you're all that in a bag of chips today. I want to hear your...
No, I'm all that in 3 bags of chips today. Now you knock me down to 1. Fortunately, it's the barbecue chips, so they don't count. Still got the salt and vinegar working for me, baby.
Salt and vinegar is awesome, man. Salt and vinegar is awesome.
Or the cracked black pepper.
Yeah, I never had that. But salt and vinegar, man, those are the bomb. Those make me want to drink more and eat more, and that's exactly what they're made for. So,
and I don't know where else all the salt is made from, because the sea salt is delicious.
I know.
There's no reason to get salt from anywhere else.
I know.
Unless there's a shortage of it in the sea.
And, which we know there isn't, so.
All right, so I guess we should probably talk about poker at some point today, right?
All right.
All right, well, it's going to have to wait a little bit, because we're going to talk about the free roll first.
That clearly wasn't poker.
It was not poker at all. I got to tell you, this was the most exhilarating, weird, odd, wacky free roll experience of my life. And it was just crazy. I could tell you what exactly happened to this, and I know we had listeners out there that watched it, so they saw it with their own eyes. So we're not making this stuff up. But if I just went on to the side of the road, I'm like, dude, let me tell you a free roll story. They would say, you're full of it, Long. No one's going to believe this. Fortunately, we had witnesses.
Oh, man, it was pretty wild.
All right, it was the last free roll of Apes this year, the 8-game mix. And, I've been avoiding the free rolls just because there's so many knuckleheads in there. It's not worth my time. But I haven't been playing the 8 games a lot lately, so I want to get in a good frame of mind because I'm going for that nanner.
Right.
Saturday, right,
right, right.
I'm going to play it, so I signed up, and I'm like, I'm going to take this seriously. I know there's going to be some, jack wagons in this thing, but that's all right. I'm going to work on my game, right? My game. So I log in, and, I get my TiVo fired up, watch, a movie, Independence Day is coming on. I'm like, all right, I'll have that in the background. Maybe I'll shoot a couple emails out during the early rounds when I don't have to pay attention. Guess what? I get to my table, and I look around. 5 people sitting out, Chris.
Oh, my God. And it's 6-handed.
5 people sitting out, 6-handed. And I'm like, of all the freaking tournaments, I'm trying to watch TV to get some work done. But no, I got to keep hitting the raise button. Raise, 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 raise.
Oh, you poor baby.
It was brutal. It was absolutely brutal. Trying to get some stuff done. But no, all I got to do here is just scoop up people's chips that didn't bother to show up. And this goes on forever. I went all the way. I don't know how many levels it went through. But then I started figuring the math. And if I bled everybody dry, I would have 9,000 in chips. I started at 1,500.
Yeah.
9,000 in chips.
Yeah.
And then people were popping in. Oh, my God, you're the chip leader. And then I'm like, oh, really? Am I? And then I look at it. I'm like, I'm not. I'm like, what? How can I not be the chip leader? I'm not playing against anybody. So it kept going on. And then right before... Chris, right before I get to the magical 9,000 and I might actually have to play someone, guess who shows up at my table?
I have no idea.
AUN 2112.
400 people in this tournament, and I get moved to your table.
Of all the gin joints on PokerStars, and right next to me, on the left of me.
Exactly where you don't want me.
Oh, man, I like that. At first I was like, oh, this is hilarious. Now I get to chat about this with you, you know, in case you didn't know what was going on. And then it quickly turns to No Limit Hold'em. And crappy is not the adjective I am using anymore. I am using an adjective not safe for work.
Begins with an S, I'm sure.
After what you brutalized me with here.
Oh,
we get the No Limit Hold'em, and every single hand, all in.
I really thought I was going to win every hand, too. I really did. I thought I was going to win every hand.
And I'm like, you know what? All right, that's fine. Who wants to ask clown around? That's all right. I'll let him. Eventually, I'm going to pick up a hand, and he's going to be out of this free roll, and he's going to be crying at home because he didn't get one of the free seats. Because he thought he was going to be Mr. Showoff here, and all in on it, right? So I get King of Diamonds, Queen of Diamonds. And I'm like, is this the hand? And at this point, I had 9,200 in chips. You had like 2,000 or so.
Yeah.
I'm going to take a show of hands from the Antiup Nation. How far are we into the show now? Like 6 minutes?
6, 7 minutes, yeah.
It's taken 6 minutes before the Antiup Nation goes, oh, Long, you are so stupid. Usually happens a little quicker than that, I think, But I'm like, you know what? You know, I can do better than King of Diamonds, Queen of Diamonds against Chris. I'm going to wait. I'm going to get a pocket pair, and I'm going to snap this cocky little guy off. And then I'm going to stand behind his table, and I don't care what if his wife comes over and tries to push me away. I'm going to, hey, no, I'm here first. That's how I'm going to treat you. So what do I get? Woohoo, pocket jacks.
And I limped.
That's right, go in. Oh, that's right, you limped. And I'm like, all right, I'm going to show you now. Boom, all in. And you beat me into the pot, and I'm like, ha! And you turn over your cards, ace, ace. WTF.
I have to tell you, Scott, I mean, I, in my entire life, family, tournaments, home games, playing at the Mirage that time, the mixed game, when I had a great time, I have never laughed so hard in my life at that moment. I laughed for like 50, I, even when hands were like coming and going after that, I was still... Like, tears were streaming down my eyes. I could not believe that we picked up those two hands. It was like you couldn't write it any more hilariously than that. I couldn't believe it. And, you know, when I was going all in every hand, I actually had a lot of really good hands. maybe like 3 or 4 times I had, like, suited connectors or queen seven or something. But really, for the most part, it was like pocket pair, ace king, ace ten, you know, king queen. So I was, like, just having fun with it. And then after a while, I realized, you know what? He really does not want to lose this 9K he got for free.
Yeah,
I'm going to expose that and take all the other hands. So that was what I did. And then after that, though, once you and I got to about even with each other, that was a lot of fun after that, though. We played a lot of real poker together.
Yeah, because they were actually playing at that
point.
That's when the Chris Cosenza all-in show came to a grinding halt.
Oh, man. But it was cool, though. It was cool. What are the odds, one, that you're going to be sitting at that table by yourself to build a stack like that? Two, with 400 people in a tournament, they're going to move just me to your table. I'm going to be on your left for No Limit Hold'em, shove every hand. And the one hand that I don't shove, you get jacks and shove yourself, and I have aces. I mean, I just could not stop laughing. I couldn't stop laughing. And as equally as hard as I was laughing, I ended up crying by the end of the day. So
yeah,
it didn't matter.
And what was even funnier is that as we kept knocking people out of our table, they kept replacing with more sit-outs.
More sit-outs. That was incredible. We got like one player, I think.
Yeah, it was almost the entire 8-game mixed rotation before we actually got another live player in our hand.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy.
Right around PLO. And then, I was proud. I battled back in limit. I can tell you're a little frustrated.
I wasn't frustrated.
I was 3-betting on deuce to 7 and making people break hands. And, you know, I won a hand to give it to you at 2-pair. And I'm like, ha ha. I mean, it's not ace, ace versus jack. Jack, ha ha. But it was what was going to pass for laughter, in my opinion. But, you know, then eventually all the real people showed up. And that's when, the toilet tournament turned into a toilet.
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah, went out 59th, and little did I know that that was probably the best thing to happen to me today, because I got to watch the last 45 minutes of Independence Day, and you were just like, woohoo, winning pots left and right, and I'm like, eh, freak. You know, Chris is going to get this darn seat off of that one hand, and I could have eliminated with King Queen probably long before that. Not had a story. And then what happened to you?
Oh my God, dude. I was a massive, massive chip leader in the tournament. I had like 37,000, 38,000 at one point, and like the closest to me was like 24 or something. And I was leader for like three more, four more rounds after that. I just went on fire. I just played every hand optimally, and I just played really well. I was really happy with myself. And then the wheels came off. I mean, it was like I could go away right now and probably win a seat. So, but I didn't want to do that. I just didn't want to do that. And then it got to like blinds are like 1 in 2,000 in Raz, and I made like a 7-5, and somebody made a 7-4 with just a 7 and a 4 showing. They had like queen and king showing. And we got too invested in it, and I lost like half my stack on there. And eventually I went all in a no-limit phase with ace-jack and went up against ace-queen and went out. And it was like 21st place. Like they paid 9 spot, 10 seats, and I could have gone away an hour earlier and easily, probably, I won a seat. I think that 30,000 would have been enough, but oh man, it was just absolutely incredible. I mean, really, it was like a tale of like two or three hands where I was at 35,000. Next thing I know, I'm at 24, and then I'm at 12, and then I'm all in, and that's how it went. You know, the blinds were so high, but yeah, karma kicked my ass. It came back to haunt me, and I really wanted to win every hand if the limit hold'em. I think that would have been unprecedented. I don't know anybody who's won every single hand when there was actually another player at the table.
That's true. Well, of course, that's the way you can do it in No Limit Hold'em. In Limit Hold'em, you're raising once. I'm not letting you
exactly.
take advantage of it. No Limit. I'm like, all right, fine.
And I only lost one hand, though. That was pretty wild. One hand I didn't play. And it was the hand that you shoved. I wanted to call so bad.
Yeah.
You know? But I had like 8-5 or something. And I was, oh my God, how mad is he going to be if I win with 8-5 here? I don't know what hand you had, but
I think I had ace king at that point.
Okay, I see. So I would have been like 60-40 anyway. I might have still won, but that was the only hand I didn't win. It was a lot of fun, and you know, at the end of it, you know, it seemed like there were pretty decent players left. You know, didn't seem like there were interlopers. You know, it seemed like there were listeners and whatever.
I think most of the interlopers were the sit-outs, and they get out of the way, and then you could actually play a real game. But you brought up a good point. At what point in a free roll do you just shut down and join me watching Independence Day?
Yeah.
You know, I don't think I could do it just because I think maybe it's just me, but I think it's kind of rude.
Deutsche Bank.
Shut down.
It's kind of Deutsche Bank.
Yeah. You know, it should be competitive, right? You should put yourself at risk. But at one point when I was almost to my 9,000, one of our listeners popped in the room and said, Scott, man, you should just sit out the rest. I didn't realize what he meant at that point. And then later on, after you were Marvin Haglering me left and right, I'm like, oh, I know what he meant now. But and then there was a guy at our table that did sit out with like 9,000 in units, and I went back and checked, he didn't win a seat, so he sat out too early. So you probably obviously could have done it at 37,000.
And it was much later too. I know who you're talking about too. I watched him get blinded out, and there was no way. I started using him as the gauge. I'm like, okay, he had like 5,000 at one point, and it's like an hour later, and he's still here. So if I have 35,000, you know, I'll probably make it. What I really should have done, and this goes back to Vanessa Russo, when I covered the camp that she held in Daytona that time, went over the magazine. She talks about always trying to figure out what the average stack is, and what the average stack will be at the final 10.
Right.
And then if you're around that number, then that's where you need to be in the final 10, roughly. I mean, that's not really the way she put it, but if I had done that, if I had taken 400 people and times 1,500 chips and divided it by 10, if it was around 30,000, you know, which I'm sure probably is around that, if it was around that, I probably should have quit. But I didn't want to be a Deutsche Bank. I wanted to play, and, you know, the Antioch Nation people were sending me messages and stuff, and I didn't want to just go away and be a jerk, and it cost me a seat. But it was fun. And believe me, I would pay $550 to be able to have this story to tell every week.
That is true.
It doesn't bother me, really. It bothered me when it happened, but I'm okay now. I texted you. I'm like, why do I bother with these free rolls? But it was a lot of fun.
All right, well, we're playing for reals this Saturday. Noon Eastern, always on Poker Stars, the A-Game Mix, the final Apes event of this year. Your last chance to win a Nanner for this year and get into the Tournament of Champions where there's 500 free bucks up for grabs. So this is your last shot to get in. And so we'll like to see everybody out there. And I'm going to have my game face on, Chris.
Yeah. I'm just hoping that something interesting is on TV that day for you and will distract you and I can keep going all in.
Yeah, I don't know what it's going to be, though, because I just watched Independence Day, and Tommy Boy was on the other day.
Cincinnati Kid.
I've got my three viewings of Black Hawk Down in for the week, so I don't know what really could distract me this week. So
Cincinnati Kid, man.
I don't know about that. They don't play that often. So.
Well, good luck to everybody. 8-game mixed. Bring your best game, because this is it. Bring your 8-game, as they say.
Your 8-game. Very nice. Well played. Well, we're getting a lot of stuff going on our forum, the boards.
The boards. Hitting the boards hard, like Charles Barkley.
NEOmagazine.com/forum. A lot of good discussions going on. And I plucked one this week so we can have a little point-counterpoint. Or maybe it's just a counterpoint. point, depends.
Point.
Find out. But, you know, a poster on the forum said, you know, hey, I was in this Florida poker room the other day, and they had banned hoodies, Chris.
Wow.
And he's like, hey, what's going on with this? Why would they do that? And our other room is doing it. So, you know, I chimed in a little bit because this came up at the most recent state rulemaking session here in Florida where all the poker room managers and the state regulators were there. And the state regulators were really kind of pushing this because they said, you know, hey, we need to be able to identify all the players in the room at all times if we need to. And the poker room manager's like, come on, that's crazy. That's a lot of cameras and stuff. And, once if we can catch them coming or going, we're all right. Let's not get crazy with the hoodie thing. But obviously one room went ahead and did it. And then unrelated, I just happened to be talking to a general manager of another room and asked him about it. I'm like, you know, hey, did I miss anything? Did the state actually come down and say no hoodies now? And he's like, no, they haven't. But we've also banned them in our room except for tournaments because in tournaments – you have to give your name when you enter, so we know who you are.
Yeah.
But in cash games, you know, you just give us, you know, Chris C. or Scott L.
Right.
We don't know who you are, so we need to be able to identify who you are, so we don't allow you to wear hoodies in cash games anymore. And I'm like, wow, that's interesting. Was it because of the state? And he's like, no, it's because there has been crime at other poker rooms around the state, not his. But and they finally decided, hey, we need to know who is playing in our room at all times.
Yep.
So, you know, unless you're going to walk in and say, hi, I'm Chris Cosenza, whoosh, put your hoodie up, you're going to have to put that hoodie down.
Well,
should they be banned or not, Chris?
I don't blame them for that because, you know, you really can keep your identity, you know, secret with a hoodie, with a well-placed hoodie and sunglasses. I mean, there's no way you could tell who that person is. And if they do like a cash and grab thing that whatever they call it, you know, smash and grab for the cash.
Or even just cheating, you know. Cheating,
oh, yeah, cheating too. But I mean crime, because I think they're talking about crime here, right?
Well, cheating's not a crime.
Well, no, I know. You know what I'm talking about. It's hard to cheat. You know what I mean? It's hard enough to cheat as it is whether you're being covered up or not. But this cash
and grab. My point is, too, is there is a blacklist here in Florida, like every other state. And, you know, generally speaking, if you get banned in one paramutual room, that's every paramutual room is going to hear about it right away, and you're going to be banned from them as well, too, which is a reason not to cheat, by the way, guys, in case you're thinking about it. You can't just get kicked out of that room and go to the one down the street. You're not going to let you in there either.
That's right.
And the Seminole tribe, I think, too, is also getting involved in that, so they're all sharing lists now, too. So you're going to be effed if you're kicked out of any room here. So, I mean, that's another reason. You know, if somebody walks in and they're a known cheat and you can't identify them by looking at them, you know, they're going to sit down and play, and theoretically, they obviously have a good chance to cheat new players. So,
my question to you is, though, I understand that they feel like the hoodie would conceal them, but wouldn't like a really carefully placed hat do the same thing? I mean, you know, if you have a pretty large hat on, or you know, even a trucker hat, as long as it doesn't have that netting, you know, what I mean, some kind of hat will still cover your head and your face enough that it makes no difference. Is it just a convenience of the hoodie and how easily it is to throw the hood on? And
yeah,
I don't know. You know what I mean?
I'm going to go out on a limb and say there's a little hoodie judgment being made. And I'm going to be the first to admit that I'm on that judgment train. I'm sorry for those folks out there that wear hoodies, but the only two people that wear hoodies, as far as I know, are rappers and white guys who think they're cool enough to be a rapper but aren't. So, you know, if you're a rapper, more power to you. I'm sorry. But, and the other guys, trust me, this is a good thing. I'm telling you not to wear them.
Yeah.
But I, you know, I'm joking a little bit. But, you know, it's true. I think there's kind of this, a little judgment that's going on that, you know, hey, people that wear hoodies are, in general, whether it's right or wrong, not the kind of people that we kind of want in our room anyhow. So it's just easy to say no hoodies, and then that way you take care of the hoodie problem, and then also you may, you know, get a few more perceived Deutsche Banks out of your room at the same time. but my guess is if, the surveillance is looking and they can't identify who you are, I would think in a room that banned hoodies, there would be a phone call made to someone, and they'd go over and ask you to, you know, move your hat and glasses for a minute, at least for the camera to catch who you are, and then you could bundle back up like your Eskimo Joe or something. just a guess, though. I mean, I haven't really specifically asked anybody about that, but
I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't know if I'd go as far as profiling to get people to not wear. You know, what's next? You know what I mean? Okay, no sunglasses or no. I don't know. It's just it's a very interesting point.
Next question. I mean, when I posted in the forum, I was thinking, like, hey, you know, are sunglasses going to be the next thing? I don't know. I don't think so. And I said that, you know, if you're wearing just sunglasses, I don't think it's concealing enough that they can't see who you are. I mean, you get some facial recognition, all that kind of stuff. It's a combination of the glasses and the hood or a hat or a burqa or whatever it is.
Yeah.
That's the problem. But, you know, it's a slippery slope. Once you get rid of the hoodies and then you got some security guy saying, hey, that woman's wearing Jackie O sunglasses. I can't see a thing.
Yeah, exactly.
And they're like, oh, okay, sunglasses are gone too. So it very well could happen. You know, I don't wear either in the room, so on a personal level, it doesn't really matter to me. But at the same time, I don't think we want people to get overzealous about this stuff either.
Yeah, well, that's real interesting. It's like that's where you know the poker room, even though it's public, is also private, right? Because if it was a public place, you couldn't tell somebody to do what they do in public. They could wear whatever they want. It's civil rights. Right. But it's their civil liberties, but it's their, really their poker room, which always makes me so angry when they don't want to take a photo of somebody. Cause I'm like, hey, they're on your property. You can take a photo of them if you want.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
it's like you're already taking photos of them. I'm sure.
Yeah, exactly. You know, that always gets me mad for the magazine. So people, you know, they conveniently remember that it's, you know, it's a public place, but you know, no, it's private. You own the land. You own the room. You could do whatever you want in your room. You could throw anybody out. You could let anybody in you want. So, you could do whatever you want in your room. So, you know, if they want to do it, that's fine. Should they be banned? I don't think they should be banned. I think that, you know, it's up to the establishment to run a secure environment and a secure place. And, yeah, I know there's a million ways you could play devil's advocate here with me. But really, I think it boils down to, are they secure enough in their security that they can allow people to be comfortable in their room? And if somebody wants to bundle up because they're cold, or if they want to bundle up because they don't want somebody seeing their jugular, that's up to them, you know. I could easily wear a turtleneck, sunglasses, and regular Scully and have the same effect as a hoodie. And, you know, are they going to ban me from wearing those things too? And if they're banning me for that, then I'm going to pick on other people for what they're wearing. And then you start this huge problem. So I don't know. I don't think they should be banned, though.
Well, you know, the other consideration, too, that it's an unfortunate or fortunate byproduct, depending on who you are, of this is you know, if more rooms catch on to this and start banning it, it's going to drive the people who wear hoodies to the available rooms that don't, right?
Yeah.
So, again, I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I mean, there's obviously a lot of people that wear hoodies that are upstanding citizens and great players. But you can imagine, though, if you get down to, like, only three rooms in Florida that allow hoodies, you walk in there, man, you're not going to be able to see anybody.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's going to be like, you know, the scene in Star Wars on the sandy planet, you know, the little Ewoks.
The sandy planet. Oh, my God, dude. You need to watch more Star Wars.
Yeah, I'll have to work on that. That was a long time ago. It was 1977. Come on, give me a break, man.
I know, but it's on, like, Spike, like, every other day. You catch it on Saturday when we're playing in the real event.
But, you know, Carrie Fisher has nothing on Natalie Portman, so I'm going to watch it doing it once, so...
All right, well, that was an interesting topic.
I got some feedback here, and I think I'm going to let you read it because it's got a little rage in it, and you always do rage better than I do.
Okay, cool. All right, it's from Bob, and I'm not going to pronounce his last name, but it begins with a W. could be Wittraus, but I'm not sure. He says, hey, guys, I just wanted to chime in real quick on Annie Duke and this new poker league. I think it's a joke, and here's why. It advertised itself as the ultimate league with only the best in the world in it. It's a lie. It's basically going to be the good old boys at Full Tilt and people like Johnny Chan and TJ Cloutier who aren't even relevant anymore. Yeah, I'm sure Daniel will get an invite, right? Ha ha. It's a flippin' joke. And your poker cast, by the way, he wrote poker sass. I just want to make sure everybody knows that.
Well, yeah, it's because we're sassy.
I know, we're sassy. Yeah. You guys said nobody wants to watch nobody's playing these tournaments. Well, guess what? When you're watching the final table of a WPT and it's an unfamiliar name, it doesn't mean anything. That guy's a player, no doubt. Basically, the Full Tilt bozos and the unrelevance from 50 years ago are tired of not making final tables, so they're rigging it for themselves. You guys were comparing it to the PGA. The difference is even the tour pros have to pay to enter the events. This thing is a broke joke. Thanks, guys.
Broke joke. I'm using that, man.
That's awesome.
Putting that on a t-shirt, including the one we're going to send you from PMS Pokerware, which sells hilarious shirts for gals and guys at PMSPokerware.com, because this is this week's mailbag, Bob. You're going to win that shirt. Of course, they don't have a broke joke one yet, but we're working on that, but they'll send you another great one. But, Bob didn't hold back there. And, you know, I think there's probably a lot of people that feel the same way, though maybe not as amped up as Bob.
Yeah, I think that that's exactly what the PPT was back in its day, and you know, all of these TV shows are like that. You know, the Poker After Dark and high stakes, I guess you could get on if you went to somebody and said, hey, I got $1 million to give away. I want to play. They'll let you play like they did with Guy Lupte. But pretty much those shows are all the same, too, except it's just one table at a time. So, yeah, I understand what he's saying. Yeah, I think I kind of agree with him, too, that, yeah, it's just for them to be able to play in tournaments and be on TV because they can't earn it themselves. But we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, I don't want to belabor the point since we talked about it last time, but I think that's an interesting point. I mean, it does seem a little odd to me that it's so exclusive now.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess that's what's different is every other tournament anybody can enter, and now they're trying to create something that's in between that and the made-for-TV invitationals. So, you know, I give them credit for it, but yeah, anytime you exclude people, you're going to get some backlash, and certainly Bob is part of the backlash, and he's not the only one.
Well, bottom line is this thing is a broke joke.
Broke joke. All right, well, you know, we're absent in 1 minute mystery now, Chris. Still sad over that.
Yeah.
You know, I was watching Larry Sanders the other day, and the dude that played Columbo was on there.
The dude that played Columbo?
Yeah, I'm trying to mix it up a little bit rather than say Peter Falk, but you know, the dude that played Columbo.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and the water work started a little bit.
You got weepy?
Yeah, we're not going to have the 1 minute mystery anymore, so. So, you know, we're going to be looking for something to add to that spot in the show, and it's probably going to be something strategy-driven, which I think is a broke joke in itself since, hey, you know, no one really wants to hear strategy from us. But so, you know, we'll see what we come up with. But in the meantime, Chris, I am going to – we have a stand-in.
Yeah.
A little body double. And it's called Call the Floor, and people know this already because we've had Jody Russell, our great poker room manager from the Annie Up Poker Cruises, which, by the way, Annie Up magazine.com/cruise.
Yep.
You only have a few weeks left to book your cruise. Only 14 cabins left. Sold another one this morning.
Yes.
So, you know, call soon and get that cabin. And you can play with Jody, too, and ask him your own Call the Floor questions when you're on board. But, you know, we've got a couple sent in. We started a Call the Floor thread at the NEAPmagazine.com/forum, too, so you can post them right there, and we'll pass them on to Jody. And so we got a couple answers, so we'll do one a week or so until we, you know,
until we run out.
Fall into something else that we could do better.
Hey, remember in the old days when we came up with what would you do? Remember
that? Yes, what would you do? Yes.
So maybe we'll resurrect that, too, if we have to. We'll get a little desperate.
That's like 2 weeks, too, right?
Yeah. We could. Well, it only lasted 2 weeks because Columbo came available.
Oh, that's right.
And then we said, ah, screw the what would you do. Let's get Columbo, and he'll tell us what to do. So that's how that happened. But maybe we'll resurrect it. We'll see.
We'll see. We'll see. All right. So do you want to read the query or Jody's answer?
I'll read Jody's answer.
All right. So here is the query. It comes from Digerati.
Is that That's good. I think that's exactly it.
Terzerati. You know, anyway, I'm not a big fan of Italians. You know, I got to work with you. No offense to any other Italians. I just got the worst one of the bunch. So, but I love trying to pretend like I can spell or sound Italian. You know, so I don't go to Olive Garden. I go to one of the real restaurants.
Yeah.
I'll take the lasagna. All right, so DiGiurati. This is a situation came up. He said, blinds are 5,100 in a no-limit tournament. Seat 10 bets 250. Seat 1 asks how much. The dealer looks back at the bet and stares for a couple seconds. Seat 1 does his own count, Chris, puts out 250. The dealer then says to seat 10, wait a minute, you're the big blind, and pushes back 150. Seat 1 pulls back 150 and says, call. The dealer then says, no, sir, you raised. Your 250 stays out. The player says, I didn't say raise. I only called, and I only want to call. Dealer says, it doesn't matter. Your bet was a raise. What's the official ruling on this? He wants to know.
Okay, well, here's his answer. It's every player's responsibility to protect his or her own hand, chips, and right to act. The technical interpretation of the rules would dictate the money stay in the pot. However, rule number one of the TDA states that I can ignore that technical interpretation and do what is in the best interest of fairness. We have no significant action behind the bet. We are going to correct the blinds and allow you to call, sir. That's what he would say. Now, the problem here is poker is a game with a lot of human interaction. Anytime humans are involved, so is human error. In the poker industry, he says, we like to think we train and hire top-notch professional dealers. Even so, they do make mistakes sometimes. The dealer here was technically correct, but since there's no action behind and the player didn't say raise, I would have allowed the player to simply call. The only way that can happen is if the floor is called over. Dealers are taught to call the floor anytime something out of the ordinary happens. Apparently, this dealer didn't follow his training or was improperly trained. So the mistakes made here were, one, dealer didn't make the blinds right before pitching the cards, which is a very bad habit that is common among less professional dealers. Two, seat one didn't make sure the action to him was correct. He should have noticed the position of the button and the blinds, realized the 10 seat should have been the big blind, and asked the dealer to correct it before he acted. Three, the dealer didn't call for a decision. He decided to make a floor decision from the box. And four, and this is a big one, none of the players at the table ask for a decision. Rule number 41 states, players are obligated to protect the other players in the tournament at all times. Each player has a vested interest where every chip goes in the tournament. Those extra chips in the pot could create a much bigger pot than it would have been, change the winner of the chips and change the entire outcome of the tournament, so etc. Speak up when you see irregularities at your table. It doesn't matter in tournaments if you have folded or weren't even dealt in. If you are active in the tournament, it is your business to pay attention to what is happening at every table that you can. And there are a lot of players who think they are being a bad person by asking for decisions. That simply isn't true. There are a lot of dealers who think it reflects badly on them for calling decisions, and that's not true either. The fact of the matter is that tournament directors get to a point during an event that everything slows down and they start looking forward to having something to do. Help them fight the boredom and earn their pay. Insist on a decision anytime things aren't normal. Pretty thorough.
Yeah, you know, the one thing very good advice, too, particularly about every player has a vested interest in tournament, you know.
Right.
I guess I kind of knew that in the back of my mind, but it was never stated that way. So, you know, you better believe I'm going to be Hawkeye roaming the tables from the tournament's now on. If the blinds were in the wrong place, Chris, were the cards pitched in the right spot?
Yeah, it did kind of. When you were reading it to me, I'm kind of trying to figure out how this happened or what the procedure was getting up to that point. I agree. It's kind of weird.
I mean, theoretically, the cards could have been pitched in the right spot. They just, you know, the button was one off, and then the small blind didn't have his chips out, and the big blind had the small blind. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
There's probably some way that it could have happened. But my first concern would be if whether the cards were even the right cards. And I'm not going to get the whole Destiny thing again. But, you know, if there's action and stuff, that's a completely different situation at that point.
Yep.
And you should just bring them back at that point. But, the one theme that I get from Jody's stuff all the time is, you know, call for a floor. You know, don't feel like you're being a jerk. I mean, obviously some players might think you're a jerk, but you never know what's going on. If nothing else, you're learning from it. You know, and I see that a lot of the times. I see a guy at the table say, you know, hey, guys, I'm not trying to be a jerk. I'm just trying to learn. And some people get them gruff about it, but you know, there shouldn't be anything wrong with that. You know, you bring a thing over, you never know what the floor is going to be. You might learn something, even though you know what the ruling is going to be. So
yeah, and a lot of times too, you get the guff from the short stacks because they don't want to take 25 minutes to figure out something when they got to shove soon. So yeah, but no, absolutely. If something's not right, it's up to you to make sure that it is put right, or at least an official decision is made.
All right, we're getting back on the road this week, Chris.
Yeah, we are. It's been a while since you and I have been in a car together.
I was looking at my my July or January calendar, and it was pretty empty. This is kind of a rare month for me.
Yeah.
Other than the little Grand Canyon escape. But we're going to be on the road Monday and Tuesday. We're going to be up at the beautiful Orange Park Kennel Club near Jacksonville, Florida. Once again, doing the television for the Chad Brown No Limit Hold'em Championship. And new this year, Monday, they're going to be doing a $100, $200 No Limit Hold'em cash game with a $50K minimum buy-in, Chris.
That's crazy.
Wow.
That's crazy. And I know that they've got some big names attached to it already. I know that Michael Craig is flying in from, like, Arizona or whatever to play in it, because he's apparently good friends with Deb Jardina, who now runs the room. She left the Wynn to run the Jacksonville room. So he's going to be there, and I think even Raisner might be there.
Yeah, we're hearing some names that are being thrown around. So, you know, obviously Chad Brown's going to be there. I heard Jason Mercier is going to be there. I don't know who's all going to be in the cash game, but they're all going to be in the tournament.
Yep.
And we're going to have a good time. You know, we get to see our good buddy Kirk. And Chicago Jason is coming down. He's
awesome.
Always fun.
Yeah, awesome.
And all the great crew from Fallow Productions. So if you guys are in the Jacksonville area or nearby, want to come and watch a good tournament, play in a good tournament, or nothing else, just watch a tournament being filmed. It's really kind of cool how these guys transform this room into a TV set.
Yeah.
In a day.
Absolutely.
And they're actually out there today doing the pocket cams now and getting state approval. It's going to be the first time pocket cams are used in the state of Florida.
Awesome. Did you have something to do with that? I think you had something to do with that.
Yeah, I kind of planted a bug in the ear at the state asking them whether these things would be all right. They gave me the brush off. So if I took a tournament where they said, hey, we're going to do it, you need to come out and tell us not to. But yeah, I guess I might have been the first one to ask.
Yeah, see, I had a feeling you were...
That's my footnote of history.
You spearheaded the movement.
And as far as I know, too, this is the first televised cash game filmed in Florida in history either. Yeah. So, you know, we're just making history everywhere, Chris.
Someday there'll be a plaque, because right now there's not even a plaque. Not a statue. All right, well, you know what? I have a feeling it was a pretty light week, but I want to hear what's going on the Ante Up news desk.
Yeah, not a lot of news going on, but that was mostly because big news was announced. The 2011 World Series of Poker schedule was announced, Chris.
Yes.
People always get excited about that. So, and there's a lot of new stuff this year, so we're just going to dedicate this news desk called the World Series of Poker 2011 schedule announced news desk.
And it'll still be at the Rio, too, by the way. Rumors of it going to be at Caesars have not come to fruition. So it's still going to be at the Rio, in case anybody is wondering.
I was really hoping it was going to be moved to the Imperial Palace.
Hey, man, we could play that was a 19-game mix on Sunday.
Yeah, yeah, the Ocean Pineapple. And then, then they had the dealer-tainers there, too.
Yes.
I would pony up another $1,500 or $1,000. To be in a World Series if I'm going to have Dolly Parton impersonator dealing to me. That would be awesome.
Getting up on the table when you make a flush and dancing for you.
Yeah, see? We're onto something here. All right, sadly, that's going to have to be maybe next year's big announcement. But this year, I'll run through a couple of the stuff that's new this year. First of all, the dates are May 31st to July 19th. Kind of fairly consistent to when it was last time. The main event, though, is going to be starting July 5th, I think, or 6th or 7th, something like
that. I think it's
so
the 7th.
It's not on July 4th is the big thing.
Yeah, I think it's the 7th.
Yeah, a little later. 58 bracelets will be given out this year. And the first event is a new one, Chris. $25,000 buy-in heads-up tournament.
I think Andy Up needs to put me in.
You think so?
Yeah, I think I'm ready.
I'm going to have to run it to our QuickBooks and see whether we have even $25.
Well, if every fan donated a dollar, I'd have maybe a third of a buy-in.
I'm going to say maybe $12, and I'm giving your mom credit for giving you at least
$10. Oh, man. That's pretty weird, though. They're right out of the gate with that big event like that.
Heads up. Wow. Can you imagine putting down $25,000 and boom, boom, out of the first hand?
Yeah, first hand, aces versus kings. No, aces versus jacks.
Jack, there we go. Yeah, that's more realistic. What I think is probably really cool this year for a lot of players, and particularly for our listeners, is all the weekends in June are they're calling them quote unquote weekend warrior weekends, I guess.
The weekend warrior tournaments.
Yeah. So every Saturday is going to be a $1,500 buy-in, no limit event, and every Sunday is going to be a $1,000 buy-in, no limit event. So, you know, those $1,000 recession busters or whatever they called them last year.
Yeah.
Were the most popular. Only a couple of them are going to be multiple day ones, though. So, I mean, some of these I think they're going to put a cap on, so there's probably going to be some rioting at the Rio. But
yeah.
But they're at least trying to make it affordable every Saturday and Sunday. So, you know, if you're going to, you know, catch a plane, get out there and take a weekend off work and go out and, you know, take your shot at the high society.
Yeah, you can pretty much go out there, play, and come home all on the same weekend. You said you play a Saturday one.
And, you know, hey, I'm getting amped up for this eight-game mix on Saturday in Apes, and I always thought that was going to be the pinnacle of poker prowess, Chris.
Uh-huh.
Not anymore.
Okay.
This year, the World Series is introducing a 10-game mixed six-handed tournament. In addition to all the eight-game mixed games, they're going to add a no-limit deuce to seven and Badoogie
cool.
to get it up to 10 games.
Very cool. No limit, obviously, will be a single draw. I would think they're not going to do a triple draw. So
right, yeah, single draw.
Yeah, yes. That's pretty cool. That is very cool. God, 10 games. I want to see those dealers. I'm hoping they can deal all the games.
How many more games can they fit in, do you think?
10 games, my God. You know, people are going to be out by the time it gets to the 10th game.
Chinese in, but then you'd have to do it four-handed.
Yeah, you can't.
Amazing, wouldn't it?
Yeah, you can't do that.
I don't know what else is missing, really.
When the tournament gets to four-handed at the end of the final table, you know, then they add Chinese. But other than that, you couldn't.
Yeah, there we go. At the final table for TV will be Chinese. You can't understand the other crazy games.
Yeah, really. I mean, how many games can you add? Oh, my God, 10-game mix. Did you happen to remember what the buy-in was for that?
You know what? I wanted to say it was fairly reasonable, like 2,500, but maybe I'm confusing it with another mixed game that they were excited that it was relatively cheap.
I was going to say, make that one $1,000, and that would be just pure mayhem.
Oh, man, yes. Every pro in our universe would be in that thing for $1,000 with a bunch of weekend warriors trying.
Absolutely.
So what's Badoogie? Can you explain it to me again? Is it ace high or low? I can't remember.
Let's change the game to Omahoogie.
All right, then, as we mentioned when they did the pre-announcement of the schedule, they're going to do hard stop times for all but the main event. You're going to play 10 levels a day, and then you're going to get 12 hours off before you come back to play. And no exceptions to this, so they're already saying, you know, hey, if a tournament's scheduled for 3 days, you know, if players are playing slow, it could go 4, it could go 5 days. You
wild.
Know, they're going to adhere to the 10 rounds and 12 hours off.
That is wild.
Of course, the main event's different because, you know, you've got longer levels and that. But, we give a lot of guff to Harris, now Caesars, for how they treat the players in the media. And so at least they listen every year. There's something new every year that is a little player-friendly, so... It's gonna let the old folks, and by the old folks I mean folks like me, 39 and older, that have to go to bed early. It's gonna give them a little bit more of an advantage here, I think.
Will the senior event be 40 and older? Because I'd like to enter that then.
Oh, that's true. I do not know. I doubt it.
All right. Well, our hotline is 813-448-1120. You call that number, and we use your clip. We'll give you something pretty cool. This call comes from Greg in Santa Cruz, California.
And I was recently playing in a 3-6 limit game in El Dorado and Reno, and I have an etiquette question for you guys. I was resting my left hand just flat on the table about a foot and a half from where my cards were at, and I was in the 5 seat, and some guy in the 8 seat complained that he couldn't see my cards. Now, do I have to move my hand? Or do I have to have the dealer to tell me to move my hands? So I was just kind of confused on that because it was just a really comfortable spot for my hand, and I didn't think I was blocking anything. But that's my question. All right, you guys are having a great show. Keep it up.
All right, when I heard this clip, Chris, I immediately thought of you. And I always usually immediately think of you.
I know what you're going to say, the Binions, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I knew it.
one of my favorite Chris Cosenza quotes. You just screamed at this woman, I can't see your cards over that Swiss Army knife collection of doodads. It wasn't doodads. I ruined it already. But it was hilarious, though. And then she got all upset. And, you can see my cards. And then, boom, you busted her.
I busted her. Like, I'm back-to-back hand. She bought it. I busted her again. Sent her home crying. I felt so bad, but I was just laughing so hard. It's true, though. It was weird. I could never see her cards because of all her crap. Yeah. That's one thing. If your arm is there and you can't see somebody's cards, you can keep your arm down if you want. I mean, you got to pay attention to see who's in the hand, you know? I mean, to me, it was like, you know, I don't know. She just had all her cards covered with crap, and that didn't seem right. You know, it's kind of like the whole cam, you know? You got to move the stuff so we can see the cards when you show them the whole cam. But this guy's arm, he just relaxed at the table. Hey, no, I'm not moving my arm. You look and watch me get dealt cards and see if I still have them. Right? I guess. I mean, I don't think I have to move.
You know, I'm having a tough time actually visualizing how it looks. If I could visualize it, I might have a better answer. But in general, I get frustrated when I can't see people's cards.
Yeah.
Because I will, you know, I'm kind of an efficient player. I will, when it's my turn, I'm going and act. And hey, wait. Sonny. Yeah. I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. Because the guy next to me has like these, you know, Andre the Giant hands, you know, and his little cards are like, you know, hidden behind his pinky ring and I can't see him. And I'm like, oh, sorry, I can't see him. So I don't know. I'm of a mixed bag here. I think, one, most importantly, you have to protect your hand.
Yeah.
So, you know, whether that's a card protector or your hands, it's hard for me to complain to someone that's protecting their hand because you got to do it. Two, I would kind of prefer that people protect their hands in a way that people could still see that they're cards.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. Like, keep your arm where you want, but make the cards visible, though.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, again, I'm a little on the fence. I'm not sure exactly what's going on here. But, you know, but his second question really is, you know, hey, can a player tell me to move my hands and I have to move them, or do I have to wait for the dealer? I don't know. I think you're kind of getting into the preschool sandbox kind of thing here.
Yeah.
You know, hey, I don't have to do what you're going to do. The dealer can tell me. I'm not that kind of player. I would probably oblige and move my hands, unless it was a ridiculous request. You know, if my cards are well within view. Yeah. Hey, let's go back to your Swiss Army knife lady. I had trouble seeing her cards, too. She had the, you know, a bottle of Red Bull. She had a cell phone. She had a keychain with, like, 90 doodads on it.
Yep.
That was ridiculous at that point. Yep. But if it's just your hands, I mean, you got to use your hands.
Yep.
You know, so they got to be allowed to be on the table. So, I don't know. I'm kind of the, let's kumbaya. Let's all try to get along. So,
well, here's what I would suggest to Greg. If you really are that comfortable with your arm there, I would say to him, look, I like my arm being here. Where do my cards need to be so you can still see them?
There you go.
And then could protect them with a card protector or a chip or something. How's that?
I like that. That's all excellent. Right.
There
excellent
you go. Advice. All right, Greg. Nice job, buddy. And never thought. You know, a lot of times you hear stuff, you know, from the clips, and you think, you know, we've had some sort of variation on this somehow in the past, and you know, but you always want to play them because they're still there. Interesting, you know, something happened to them, and they want to have it dealt with. But this is the first time I ever heard of that. That was pretty wild. You're so comfortable at the table that you want to like pretty much lay down on it. You don't want to have to not do that. So what can you do?
That'd be great. Hey, I'm sleepy. I need my pillow.
I'm sleeping here.
Lay off me, buddy. Hey, can you pass the marshmallows? Thanks.
Hey, can we make the table Tempur-Pedic so I don't spill my beer when you jump on the table?
All right, well, Greg, we're going to send you some lovely swag because you called the hotline at 813-448-1120. And next time someone says, hey, I can't see your cards, you're going to say, hey, I am happy to move my arm so you can see these beautiful J-Design playing cards that I'm holding in my hand. They are the official playing cards of Andy Up, and you can get them at classicplayingcards.com. And send us your address, and we'll get those right out to you.
Remember, Sven, our friendly Poker Stars Porsche dealer? Sven's still very excited.
Yeah!
He already knows that Poker Stars players together earn enough VIP points to redeem 5 Porsches every day. What's made him a little more excited is the fact that 5 of our Poker Stars players have already claimed these lovely pieces of German engineering. Keep Sven happy. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out why our rewards program seems to have left all the other schemes, well, stuck in neutral. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
PokerStars recently announced a new product that has online players everywhere buzzing, Chris. It's simply called Home Games, and that's exactly what it is. Bring the home game experience online so friends from around the world can play together in their own private cash games and tournaments. But it's also much more than that, and that's why we're happy to welcome Vanessa Russo, a PokerStars team pro, back to Annie Up to tell us about it. Thanks for joining us, Vanessa.
Woohoo! Thanks for having me.
Well, before we talk about the home games feature, I want to catch up a little bit with you, see what you've been doing since we last had you on the show. First, I want to congratulate you on making that final table at the most recent World Poker Tour event. I know that's always been a goal of yours, and it was quite a star-studded final table, wasn't it?
Oh, definitely. I mean, it was crazy. It was definitely, there wasn't a soft spot at the table for sure. So they don't make it easy on you to try to win those things, and so you know, I knew that coming in with the chip lead was a big advantage, but it was still going to be a tough battle, and ended up finishing in third, and I was happy with that. You know, would have been nice to win, but making the TV final table and getting that monkey off my shoulder was nice.
All right. Well, you also finished one of PokerStars' best events of the year, the PokerStars Caribbean Adventure in the Bahamas, and while there, you led one of your signature boot camps. This one was for ladies only, though, right? How did that go, and do you have other camps coming up soon?
Yeah, well, I guess I'll answer the second question first. The next few camps that I have coming up are, we have one coming up in Vancouver, Canada, or it's at the Cascades Casino, which is near Vancouver, I think. And I've never actually been up there, so I'm not sure exactly where that is, but the Cascades Casino, and it's going to be not just for women, it's for men and women, and it'll be one of my more general tournament theory, intermediate players type of camps. And we're really, really excited about that one. And then we're actually in the planning phase for a couple of other camps. Nothing specific set, but, you know, so that one's happening in February, and then we'll be scheduling a couple for April. And then some, of course, we'll have our annual main event prep camp again this summer in Vegas, where we haven't announced yet which casino we're going to have it at. We held it at the Aria last year. So, we don't know if it's going to be there again this year. We'll see, but when we find out, we'll let you guys know. And then as far as the ladies camp in the Bahamas, yeah, that was great. It was a huge turnout. We had like 50 students, and the ladies were all actually remarkably advanced. It was the first all ladies camp that I taught where all of the campers except for two were intermediate or advanced. And so I really got to get into some of the more advanced concepts, and I was really, really impressed with their level of skill.
Yeah, I'm always so impressed with how busy you are and how you manage your schedule. And I know the last time you and I chatted was at the World Series, and it was at camp at Aria, and we tried to hook up desperately to talk about your iPhone app, which is another thing you're doing, but that just didn't work out. Can you tell us today about the app and what it's about?
Sure. It's really exciting, actually, because we just released version 2 of the app, which had a really cool additional feature added to it. So it's an Apple, you know, you can get it in the Apple Store, application called Poker One-on-One with Vanessa Russo, and it focuses on heads-up play or playing one-on-one against your opponent. And we have both an iPad and an iPhone version. And I know the iPhone version costs $1.99. I'm not sure about the iPad version, but I think it's the same. And basically, it's sort of like three things in one. It's part utility, which you can use to play against your friends either through Bluetooth if they have another iPad on the same iPad, the screen splits in half.
Oh, wow.
Or actually across the internet using the Game Center on the new iPhone operating system, which I don't know if you guys have ever used that, but this is a really cool feature that allows you to play against yourself and or other people. I mean, to play against your friends and or people that you maybe don't even know over the internet. You get matched with random opponents. So it's part utility that allows you to play other people. It's part training game, which basically trains you with different forms of artificial intelligence that model different types of opponents you'll face in heads up. For instance, we've simulated like a super loose opponent, a very tight opponent, a very skilled opponent, a very, you know, completely unskilled opponent, and everything in between. And it has a little mini boot camp section that teaches you about each type of style and how you play against that style. And then you have to actually beat the game with a certain level of consistency against each of those types of opponents. So it helps train you to tweak your game in different heads-up scenarios. And then the third feature that it is it's also like a game where there's different levels of artificial intelligence that gradually get harder as you beat them, and you work your way towards the Vanessa Russo AI, or artificial intelligence, which is the hardest one in the game, and try to beat me. Or basically, we've actually modeled the intelligence to be similar to my own heads-up style. And so it's part game, and I'm really excited about it, and had great feedback, and it's just super cool to be on the forefront of, you know, the poker industry, kind of like doing applications on the iPhone. It's pretty cool.
It's kind of like the Mike Tyson Punch-Out game from the Nintendo years. You had to beat like Glass Joe and all the other losers before you got to the quality person whose name's on the actual game.
Well, I never played that, but that sounds just about like...
I'm going too old school for you, I think, there.
Oh, but it's interesting that you have an iPhone app now that features heads-up play, because the NBC Heads Up Championship is coming up again here soon. You've had a great deal of success there, but I'm interested now because you put your AI out there. Are players going to be able to use that to... play against you better at the Heads Up Championship this year?
I doubt if the other top pros that I'm going to be playing against, you know, because it's invitation only at NBC Heads Up, are going to take the time to actually like play up to the through the game to get to the level where you get to play against me and then play it enough to know how to beat me. I mean, honestly, like, that would be so much work. It's just EV, it's probably net negative. So I don't think I have to worry too much.
So GoDaddy, one of your endorsement partners, is always does some new commercials for the two. Are you you getting ready to do another one?
Yeah, we're getting ready, making those plans now. And so when I go to play the NBC Heads Up in the first week of March, we'll be hopefully unveiling that new commercial. So excited about that one for sure.
Now, you know what? I heard that you signed an endorsement with an energy drink. Can you tell me a little bit about that? And it just seems to me that you already got a ton of energy. Will this just put you over the edge?
That was actually, you stole my opener, man.
Oh.
Clearly, I don't need more energy. But, I mean, that's just not true. You know, during tournaments, when they play for, like, you know, 12-hour days and things like that, and especially after dinner, once I get food in my tummy, I get sleepy like everyone else. And, you know, so I need energy. And I know that that's actually when people make the most mistakes. And so I want to, instead of being tired myself, I want to be alert so that I can take advantage of all the mistakes that everyone else is making around me. When they, you know, start to get relaxed, they have a drink here and there, they've got food in their stomachs, and basically they get tired. So having energy during a tournament has always been really important to me. And I signed with EQ Energy because they focus on healthy. They don't have sugar in them. They taste good. They're little tablets sort of that look like Alka-Seltzer that you wow. drop in a bottle of water, and they fizz and they taste good. And they also have like other supplements in them, and they work great for me. So they're much healthier than like coffee or the other green goo colored energy drinks that are out there. And so, I signed a deal with them and, representing their product now. Yeah.
Very cool.
And we're also getting ready to head up to the Chad Brown No Limit Hold'em Championship in Jacksonville, Florida. And we had a good time chatting with you last year. I know Chris had another brain teaser already for you, but it sounds like you're not going to make it. You're out in Europe, right?
Yeah, unfortunately, I have, you know, well, I guess fortunately or unfortunately, depends how you look at it. I had to, you know, come out to France to do the TV show that I did last week, which was called Tournage Le Duel. It's a show where contestants qualify and stars to play against the pros, and they work their way forward towards a bigger prize the more pros they beat in a heads-up format. So I did that last week. That was, like, for charity. And then I have a week off before next week I go to Deauville for the European Poker Tour event. And as you guys know, I represent PokerStars for both Team USA and Team France. So, you know, I have obligations to come to Europe, you know, 3-4 times a year. And this was one of the things that we'd agreed to. So it meant that I had to miss Chad's tournament, which that part sucked. But I'm sure he'll have a great event nonetheless. And hopefully I'll be able to make it next year.
We'll have to wait till next year for me to give you the brain teaser then, because it's something that you have to see. I can't explain it over the...
Okay. All right. I'll wait till next year. Oh, eagerly wait.
All right. Let's start chat about the new home games feature from PokerStars. Can you give us kind of a quick overview of how it works?
Sure. Okay. Well, basically, it sort of like gives you the pilot command center for... controlling the sorts of games that you play on PokerStars, whether it's tournaments or cash games, and not only just the format of the games, but who you play against. It allows you to organize like leagues with your friends or other people, and or like regular home games where you can keep stats within that group, where you can set up tournaments of certain buy-ins in certain nature with certain specific blind levels, where you can set up cash games. Everything is completely customizable, and the amount of things you can customize is constantly being added as the programmers add to the software. But the original version that they rolled out, you know, a week or so ago was just awesome. I was blown away with the capabilities, and I'm going to be doing a lot of cool home games type things with my boot camps coming up soon. So I'll definitely let you guys know when I make an announcement about that. But it's just an awesome feature, in my opinion. It's really going to take online gaming a significant step forward. It's really a sort of, I mean, when I first saw it, I was like, wow, that's a game changer. And it really, really is.
Can you tell us how we can sign up for it? How people can just go in there and start their own home game?
Yeah, it's easy. It's so it's all, if you just go to Google and Google, I mean, this is the way I would do it. Home game PokerStars, you'd be taken right to the site and sign up and make your account and all of that.
Okay.
And then from there, it gets linked to your PokerStars account. And there's like a new tab now on the client where you click on the home games tab to access your home games that you're linked into. And then, you know, of course, you can manage a home game. You can join other people's home games. There's a lot of different ways that you do it. And there's like a tutorial FAQ type information on PokerStars' website. You can't miss it. But yeah, it's really, really not hard. They made it very user-friendly.
PokerStars has, up until then, offered a private tournament product where people could create their own private tournaments. This is obviously much more full-featured than that. What more can you tell us about how you think people are going to use it differently than they use the private tournament thing that we do right now?
Well, I mean, the cool thing is that if you used to like to do private tournaments, I mean, this is actually kind of gives you the flexibility to have like your own league where, you know, kind of like how what's that thing that all the guys do with the football when they
fantasy
football?
It's really similar, except for it's like you're not going to be betting on other people's football teams. You're actually going to bet on something you have a lot of control over, which is yourself. And so you can actually set up leagues and have certain parts of the prize pools withheld from tournaments over the course of the league and given to the best stats performer by the end of the league. And I mean, you know, so that gives it a much more than a just, you know, one-time tournament type of thing. It makes it like extended. It reinforces the benefit of long-run optimal play. So it helps you kind of get over the, if you get unlucky, like in one tournament or whatever, you know, hopefully that can be overcome over the course of a season when you can indicate your dominance by outperforming your peers in the long run. And poker really is a long-run game. And so allowing these league format things to be formed really is meets the needs of the game of poker very, very well, in my opinion.
Now we've talked with you before about being a celebrity and of course Chad, you and Chad together going out and things like that. And so obviously that's awesome, but at the same time you probably are looking for some privacy. Will the home games allow you to enjoy the online experience even more than you do now?
For me, it's really cool. You know, I travel so much. I don't get to spend as much time with my family as I'd love to. And my sisters recently asked me to teach them to become better poker players. And so now I'm actually going to be able to make a home game just for my family. And we'll be able to chat in the chat box. And it'll just be between myself and my sisters. And I'll be able to slowly teach them how to play over time. And it'll be kind of just like we're sitting at our kitchen table at home, except for we'll be doing it via the internet, because all three of us live in different states. So I think that feature is pretty cool.
Yeah, it's probably one of the best things is kind of bringing families and friends together that just can't get together for a normal, kitchen table game, right?
Right. It's basically just like you would do in a home game at your house, except for now you don't have to deal with the awkward shuffling of the cards and all that, which just slows everything down anyways.
Yeah.
All right, and then you mentioned you're going to create one for your boot camp students. You're obviously going to do one for your family. Are you going to do a separate Russo Brown one where you and Chad can beat up on each other in private?
I would say the odds of that are probably pretty good.
All right, Vanessa, we thank you as always for joining us. It's always a pleasure having you on Annie Up, and best of luck in all this great stuff that's coming up in the future. Enjoy your trip over to Europe, and we'll remind our listeners you can go to pokerstars.com/homegames for more information on the home games product or to create your own home game.
Thanks, Vanessa.
Thanks for having me.
Hi, this is Team PokerStars Pro Vanessa Russo, and you are listening to the Ante Up PokerCast.
You gotta fight for your right to play!
Chris, I don't know if you're a tennis fan at all.
Oh, man, I was a huge tennis fan growing up.
Were you?
Yeah,
right,
I really was.
They're over in Melbourne now, Australia,
yep.
Down under. Must be the time to be there, actually, because the Aussie Millions is going on now. And tennis is going on there now, and we're getting hands of the week from Melbourne now.
it's the buzz capital of the world.
People are just out having a good time, doing stuff, being active. So this comes from Rob T, all the way from Melbourne, Australia. Welcome to the nation here, Rob. And he says, long time, first time, he calls himself.
Okay.
Long time listener, first time hand of the week submitter, I guess.
Okay.
Kind of left out some details, but I'm assuming that's what it meant.
Yeah.
He says he finally found himself in a quote-unquote situation worth submitting. See, I like it.
Yes.
I call it the situation of the week and people respond. Yes, Scott, it is a situation. And to be honest, I actually forget about the texture of this hand. So we'll equally be surprised as we go through this.
Okay.
I know it was worth a situation of the week. All right, he says it's a full ring, $10 no limit online. Oh, he's a full ring, $10 no limit online grinder. He decided to shell out $250 Australian, and he says they're at a parity these days, so you can think of it as U.S. dollars.
Okay.
So it's not out of whack like the euro and stuff like that.
Okay.
All right, so he laid out $250 for a shot in the Aussie Million Satellite at level 2. He says 20% in this tournament progressed to a single table satellite for a ticket to the main. He says this is something out of his comfort zone, Chris. So his plan was to play tight early, settle in, and take it from there. So look, since it's a situation, obviously, before we get to the hand, what do you think about that? When you're out of the comfort zone, first of all, what do you think about getting out of your comfort zone?
I think that it's good every once in a while so that you can, you know, it's kind of like the on-deck batter. He puts the weights on the bat, and he swings a lot. He swings a lot. Then when he takes the weights off, it's much easier to swing. I think that if you put yourself into a discomfort zone, that you can handle the stress there. When you get back into the zone where you're comfortable, you handle it that much easier. So I think that it's very important to your career or, you know, your overall game to experience what it's like to play at those levels. Because, one, you never know how you're going to handle it. You may end up handling it easily, and then all of a sudden that is your comfort zone. And you're playing for more stakes, or you know that okay, it's something I should never do again, or whatever. You know, so I think it's important for you to experience that. You know, I think it was might have been Chip Reese who said, if it doesn't hurt a little, then you're not really playing poker. If you lose, you know what I mean. If you lose, it doesn't hurt. So I think you should try it, and I think that's good for him. And as far as a strategy, I don't have a problem playing tight. You know, if you're not comfortable, you might as well only go to battle with good hands that you're comfortable with. So
wait till you get comfortable.
Yeah, exactly.
I think what you'll find, and I think we both found this at the World Series when we blew our bankroll to get in those things, is that we were probably a little nervous starting out too, but after a while you realize you're just playing cards.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're playing against cards against people. I mean, I guess I had some kind of pro at my table that only Mike Basso could identify. So I wasn't stressed out. I mean, after a while, he's like, hey, I'm just playing Stud 8 or Omaha 8 or whatever it is that I normally play. So after a while, you're not going to be so uncomfortable, and then you can start playing your real game.
I had Dewey Tomko's kid at my table.
Ah, yes.
Everybody kept walking by and saying, hey, where's your dad? I felt bad for him.
All right, well, Rob sits at the table. He gets to the seat, looks around, and there appeared to be four or five tables with full ring stacks, but only half filled with players. All right, so they must not even either sold the seats out yet or people haven't got there.
Hmm.
Got it?
Yeah.
All right, he says at his table, there's a player to seat one. He's in seat two, our hero is. Players at seat four and five, but apparently the rest are dead stacks.
Jeez.
Right now. It sounds like an apes event.
Yeah, it does. It does.
All right, so this blind start at 2550, and they start with 2500 units. On hand one, player five is the button. Player one min raises, and player five took it down with a three bet. For hand two, a nerdy kid in the early 20s. Hey, I'm in my late 30s. sits in the three seat. Player one folds, and I look at three of hearts, three diamonds. As the dead stacks are in the blinds, I'm happy to try to steal with a 3x raise.
Okay.
So I guess it's on us. You get three of hearts, three diamonds, and a couple dead stacks. Are you going to try to raise and take it here?
Sure.
I'm not allowed to say raise and take it.
I would raise if there were players at the table if I was first to come into the pot.
Yeah, it's true.
So, I mean, I'm going to do it with nobody there. So, yeah, I would raise 3X and hope that nobody wakes up with a hand that's actually living at the table.
Hmm. Yeah, Gundaman on our forum says that we fall into the cliches too much. So we're going to have to work on a cliche cleansing this week. So. All right, so you're going to make a 3X. I agree. In particular with the dead size, all the more likely that you're going to be able to take it here. If not, you're showing aggression, right?
Right.
No one knows you have just threes.
Right.
You represent a wide range. And then, you know, bingo, bango, bongo, you hit a three on the flop, then it's all that much better, right?
I think bingo, bango, bongo falls into the cliche now.
Oh, okay. I need a ricky ticky tabby. Can I do that? It's old school, I know.
Eeny, meeny, miny.
No, that's way too old school. right, I'm going to say Ricky Tikki Taffy now. That's my new catchphrase.
All right, so Ricky Tikki Taffy, we raise it three.
Yeah, I guess by the author or whoever it is.
Raise it three times the big blind rather than saying 3X because that's a little
too. There you go.
Too.
Very good. See? We can work through this. all right. Player three calls and player four and five fold. All right, so I guess we're heads up now.
All right, we're heads up with – is this the teeny bopper that you were talking about before, 20-year-old or whatever? Or is this C3?
Yes.
All right, so he's a young kid.
Nerdy kid in the early 20s. Go ahead and judge away.
All right. Does he have a hoodie on? I want him banned.
There's no knowledge of a hoodie wearing.
Okay.
On. He's nerdy, so I don't know. I mean, how many nerds do you see wearing?
Yeah, not that many.
Deutsche Banks, yeah, but not nerds.
Okay. All right, so we raise and he calls, and we're heads up. Now, we have position on this guy now? I can't remember.
It's tough to say. I don't know where we are here.
Because the dead stacks were in the blinds, right? So that means that we can't. So he has to have position on us if he...
Yeah, I got to think that he's probably in the button. So
okay. Not good.
Yes, he is. We are out of position. How's that?
All right, that's not
I skipped ahead, and I'm going to rewind. Back to where I was. Okay. All right, the flop is the three of spades, four of hearts, six of spades. So we flop bottom set, somewhat coordinated board, but not the kind of coordinated that we normally are worried about.
Right.
And there's 375 in the pot, and the action's on us.
I'm betting between 275 and 300 here. How's that?
Standard continuation bet, right?
Yeah, it's pretty standard. I mean, it looked like I have ace-king if I bet it that way. Plus, you know, you want to make sure that if this guy does happen to have something like queen-jack of spades, that he's paying enough. That it's going to be a mistake. You want him to call when it's, you know, not the right odds. So I'd make, you know, like I said, 275, 300 or so. I think it's about the right amount.
Okay, well, our hero goes 400, so overbets the pot.
Well, you know what, though? I mean, if he's wrong and somebody's got, like, a straight already or whatever and they shove on you, you got 10 outs if you want to call. I don't think I'm laying down a set at any point here. He's got the straight. So I think the overbet is probably too much at this point, but I don't know. I know that...
well, remember, he's out of his comfort zone here.
Yeah, he's out of his comfort zone.
So, I mean, he probably doesn't want to... he doesn't want this hand to last any longer than it has to.
Yeah, yeah, that's a lot of money,
whether that's optimal or not. I mean, that's the situation you're in, so...
Yeah.
Now, the problem is, though, if we get called here, and then now we're playing a pretty big pot on the first hand or second hand of the tournament.
Did he tell us what the stack sizes were again? I can't remember.
Well, we started with 2,500.
2,500, okay.
This is the second hand.
All right, so we've already invested, at least 550, or 500?
Yeah, so we'll be a little bit below 2,000 right now.
Okay, that's a pretty big chunk of our stack. If he came over the top, I don't think I can get away from it, so...
Well, the other thing, too, is, I mean, we're behind the, three hands here.
Yeah.
Pocket sixes, pocket fours, and, 2-5 and 5-7.
Right, few hands.
It's tough to put them on any of those other than maybe.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, maybe a different set, you know, bigger set. But other than that, really, I can't think that we're behind here. So I don't know. I don't know if I like that amount of a bet, but I would bet here. So I don't fault him for betting.
Okay. All right. So he bets 400. His hope is to make the draws pay or to take it down. You're not to say take it down anymore, Rob. Sorry. Win the hand.
Win
without
the money
additional
in the middle.
Action. All right, but our opponent just calls.
Okay.
All right, now at this point, I don't know whether you can narrow him down too much, but...
I don't know. I mean, you can think about two
he's
overs.
He's got another set. I think that takes care of the set problem, right? So I think we're ahead right now.
Yeah, I think we're ahead. I think it looks like to me like it might be two overs with two spades or...
Yeah, two spades. I don't want to see a spade come on the next turn. I can tell you that.
Could be pocket fives. We definitely don't want to see a spade.
I would be happy, to be honest, to see an ace or a king, probably.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
As long as it's not a spade.
Yeah, I don't like the call, but I still think we're ahead. I think if he had a straight, he might call, though. He might call with a straight, but those two spades might scare him. So I really don't put him on, like, 5-7 or...
Yeah, yeah.
No
I think, I really, I mean, obviously it's the first hand. We don't know how this player plays. But generally speaking, a realistic ABC player, I think we can eliminate the straights and the sets right now. So we're ahead, and we just got to run it out here.
Yeah, yeah. Hopefully win the race.
All right. The turn is the King of Spades. So our board now is the Trey of Spades, Four Hearts, Six of Spades, King of Spades. So we got our king that we were hoping for, but unfortunately it was a spade, which we absolutely did not want.
Ugh. UGH. Is that cliche? I don't know. Because I tell you, that's what I'm thinking.
You know, everything from, you know, again, maybe it's too early in the hand, but this is just screaming to me this guy has spades.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like
there.
It's anything else. Yeah. Even if he could have ace of spades, king of hearts or something, and now he's got, because he had two overs with the ace of spades in his hand, maybe he's floating, you know, and now he's actually hit his king, and he has ace of spades behind him, too, because he had that as a backup for the river. So, I don't like that card at all. I'm thinking defensive bet here, but because you don't want to just automatically let somebody floating take it from you, you know. But we bet 400 is 800, so this has got to be about 1,000 in the pot. We have 2,000 left. You bet 750, you've bet like 30% of your stack. It's getting really close. You know, what kind of bet can you make here? Or you're not just giving up on the hand.
Yeah, at this point, I mean, we're, like I said, a little bit below 2,000. Plenty of chips left if we want to chuck it in, which is tough to do with a set.
Yeah.
But if we put any more money in, I think we're getting pretty close to the committed line, aren't we?
Yeah, I mean, maybe 500 might be a interesting bet.
500, that would leave us about 1,450 and 2,550. Yeah, I could live with that if I got re-raised.
If he shoves, and I think I could get away from it. Even if I couldn't get away from it, I have 10 outs, probably to the best hand.
Right.
The only
hand
we're behind is, you know, as far as making our boat is bigger sets. So
yeah, three sets. Yeah.
I make a bet of like 450, 500 here just to see if this guy thinks it's fishy and see how he acts. I really don't know. I hate admitting that, but this is a tough situation now because if you put him on spades, you know you're behind. If you check, you know, he's going to bet more than 500. So if you bet 500.
He's going to bet something here, obviously.
So. It's scary. I guess I would check. The problem is I really don't know what would happen if I did check. So,
well, again, I mean, this is what happens when you're out of position. I mean, I hate to be this wimp that's always folding, but I just don't like to play out of position.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a staple of poker. Yeah. You know, if you're in position, you have control. When you're out, you don't. So sometimes you got to be a wuss when you're out of position, and sometimes you got to be a lot stronger when you're in position than the cards dictate. So,
okay, well, now I'm dying to know what he did.
You know, let's factor some other stuff in here, whether he's right or wrong. I mean, he's out of his comfort zone. He plucked out $250 for a satellite. You know, do you really want to go to the mat on your second hand?
Don't forget, there are a lot of dead stacks that you can take abuse of later.
Dead stacks, yeah, absolutely. I don't know. Tough call. I know there's some people listening that say this is not tough at all. But, Rob, I'm going to say this is a tough call.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I would bet. And probably bet, like I said, around maybe 500 or so. And then if he shoves, I have to really think about it. And then if he calls, then hopefully I pair up the board on the river and then don't have to worry about it anymore.
Yeah, then you just get it in. Yep.
But I'm going to have to bet here. I just can't give up control of this hand when I have a set. And I don't know that he has a flush, you know.
All right. Well, he bets 1,000, Chris.
Wow, that's pretty steep. That's 50% of your stack, so you can't fold now no matter what. If he shoves.
I mean, the good side of it is for the folks out there saying that you shouldn't fold his hand anyhow, now you're committed and you don't have to worry about it.
Right.
If you get re-raised, you got to get it all in here and just hope for the best. The bad side is, you know, you make a smaller bet like you know, you were saying, Chris, so you might still be able to get away from this if you can. But I don't know. Oh, he bets 1,000, and what he was thinking was that if his opponent had a set of fours or sixes or the unlikely made straight, he probably would have gone all in on the flop. And if he made his flush, so be it. I don't know whether they would have gotten all in.
Yeah, I don't know if he would have shoved with the straight. He's going to want to extract some chips. Can't always be afraid of a spade.
So you would have known that. So
yeah. So I don't know. I just can't put somebody on a straight here with that preflop raise. So.
Right.
He might have. I feel like he has spades, but I really got to put a bet out there to make sure. If he doesn't have spades, he might let it go. And if he does, I can make a decision then based on what he does. So, the 1,000. No, I'm mad. Now I've taken the decision out of my hands because if he shoves, I have to. You know, I can't fold. And even if he doesn't on the river, what do you do then? If he just calls, then what do you do? Check on the river and then fold for 1,000 when there's going to be about 5,000 in the pot. You get 4-1 and 5-1 on your money. I mean, so. Yeah, I would have bet a little less than that. But, all right, so what happens?
All right, well, his opponent takes his time and shoves.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, uh-oh, a flush. And although I didn't do the math, or as they say in Australia, the maths.
The maths.
I love that.
That's pretty funny.
He knew he had 10 outs.
Yeah, 10 outs, and you can't fold now. I mean, how can you fold with 1,000 left? I mean,
way too much of your stack in to fold now.
I mean, I guess you have 20 big blinds with dead stacks around. There is the S factor that Scott likes to use.
But even Scott could not employ an S factor at this point, you know.
Yeah.
I've got a hand that can improve even if I'm behind. You know, I wouldn't have bet this much. I wouldn't have got myself in this situation, which, again, may not be the right thing to have done anyhow. May be the best thing to get it all in here. I know.
I guess I have to call now. I mean, like I said, I would have bet less and maybe gotten away from it. Even then, I don't know if I would have. But like you said, you have 10 outs. You have 25% chance to win. You're getting 5-1 on your money, so you're getting better odds. So you have to call.
All right. Well, that's exactly what our hero does. He calls, and our opponent turns over the ace of spades, 7 of spades.
Yeah. No shock there. I mean, maybe that's kind of loose that early in a tournament to call a raise with, but he's in position, and it's not a great ace, but he's in position with four-handed, so I would have called with that too. So yeah, there's no shock there.
You know what really hurt our hero here too is that ace seven is a terrible hand. But like you said, early in the tournament, short-handed, you're going to take a flyer on it. And then the flop comes with all unders. It's your sevens, too.
Yeah.
Plus the flush draw at that point, even the 400, I mean.
And the straight draw, too. A 5 gives him the straight to the 7.
That's true. So. Yeah, there's a gajillion outs for him. So he was going away probably with anything.
Yep.
So. Well, our hero says he is walking away just as the table fills. And he said he hopes does not come across as a bad beat, but would be interested to hear what we think of the table dynamics of play with dead stacks. And, when I like to play with dead stacks, I like to play with all dead stacks. I find it far easier to extract chips. So that'd be my first piece of advice. Don't enter Aussie Million satellites, enter Ape satellites. And you might have that happen.
Well, the thing about these dead stacks, I'm sorry to interrupt, but the thing about these dead stacks are it's not like you're online where you can play 50 hands of dead stacks in an hour. Mm-hmm. Whereas dealing it live, you're going to get 25, you're going to get 75 every once in a while. What I mean? It's not like you can really, really accumulate a huge stack from dead stacks. So it's something to take into consideration when you know there's going to be a little bit of dead money in there and it'll help you survive. But these are the early rounds and the guys are going to show up. So it shouldn't affect too much of your thinking. I still would have raised the pocket threes, and I still would have bet out. And no matter what you're doing, you're probably getting your money all in here. Because if he had re-raised you on the flop, you would have definitely called. And so there's really nothing you can do. Obviously, the board didn't pair on the river. That's why he was getting up and watching everybody sit down. So it's a shame. But I didn't mean to interrupt you there.
No. The other thing, too, about the dead stacks here is even while they're dead stacks until people sit down, remember, we're out of our comfort zone here, right?
Right.
And, we know about Rob is what he wrote here, but I would think if you're out of your comfort zone, playing for this kind of limit. You're probably also out of your comfort zone playing three-handed, which is what it is right now.
Yeah.
And, again, we're just extrapolating the information we have here. A kid in the 20s, you know, very likely could be one of these hyper-aggressive kids, right?
Yeah.
And they're going to put you to a test every single hand when it's three-handed. You know, they don't need to have a hand. They don't need to have a hand when it's ten-handed.
Yeah.
Certainly don't need to have a hand when it's three-handed. So, you know, at that point, I think I'm not really worried about the dead sex. I'm just going to, like, you know, put my hoodie up, sit back, and wait for a strong hand, and know that there's probably going to be some action for me with it.
Well, think back, though. Think back to when you were first learning to play poker. Let's say you were in his situation and you got pocket threes. I don't think you would have folded him, right? Three-handed?
Oh, no, I'm not saying fold. I would have raised here as well, too. What I'm saying, though, is that when you're sitting down and you think about the dynamics of the table, I'm not going to probably go crazy with trying to steal blinds with 7-8 of hearts or something like that that I would do if it was a fuller table or I was more comfortable at the table.
Right.
I would be waiting for some of those, you know, ace kings, aces, you know, pocket pairs, that kind of stuff.
Right.
And we got one. So, I mean, it was not a great pocket pair. And then, of course, we hit a flop. We got a set, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And there's no way you put them on the hand that's beating you at that point. And you're right. They weren't beating you at that point. But when the spade came, I would have either checked or put a defensive bet out. Not so much that it committed me that I had to hit my boat. And, you know, when the guy shoves, obviously he's got you beat there. So it's tough. It's tough. A tough situation. And it's tough to be out of your element, too. You know, you want to beat yourself up over it. You say to yourself, no, I could have done that 250. I didn't have to do this. I could have played at my normal level, you know, and used this money for a long time. But you have to take a chance every once in a while. What if you had won? What if you were playing in the Aussie Millions? Yeah. And, you know, so, you know, good luck, though. And I'm glad you took a shot, and I'm glad you sent the hand in.
Yeah, yeah. Kudos to you to get out of your comfort zone. And, you know, don't be result-oriented. Don't worry about it. You know, next year comes, take another shot.
Yeah.
And in the meantime, it's not quite worth $250, Rob. Maybe it is in Australia now. But you are going to get something out of this story. You're going to get a free download of the Poker Hand Breakdown Pro, a hand history analysis program for single and mixed games from the good folks at element26.net. We will email you the download directions for that. And we've got a lot of hands of the week actually backed up now, Chris. But that doesn't mean that we can't move you up in the queue.
We've
got a really good one.
That's right.
So send it to us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com, and you can use the same address for the mailbag.
Well, I want to thank Vanessa Russo for taking time out of her Arctic adventure to call in and talk to us about the home game situation. Sounds like a lot of fun. I'm starting to see commercials for it too, Scott.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, sounds like a lot of fun. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.
Okay. Yeah, well, I thought you were going to say something else. I thought you were making like one of those parenthetical comments, but then you had something even bigger to say. So that's why I waited. I wasn't sure. I didn't want to interrupt you. So.
Oh, okay. I thought I lost it. Ooh, wow.
No, I'm here. Yeah, can you hear me?
It's weird now.
Uh-oh. This is not good.
Yeah, you're like cutting in and out.
Uh-oh. Not good. I'm going to wait. I'm not going to stop the recording. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, it's weird.
Let's see. It's 36:59 in.
Playing all my cables here. Just in case it's me. All right, talk again.
Okay, I can hear you perfectly. So,
man, this sucks. I mean, I can hear you, but it's got like this backbeat to it.
Oh my God. Okay. Well, I'll stop the recording and call you back.
Back now to you.
Huh. Yeah, you're as clear as day here. Can you hear me now?
Nope, I can't hear you at all.
Oh, man, you can't even hear me at all. That's not good. I think I'm going to lose you then, because that's usually what happens next.